The Round Golf Podcast with Richard Kaufman.
Hello again, welcome to the latest episode of the Round Golf Podcast, brought to you by Red Ray and Navigate Contracting. As you know, podcast this week with Jazz Jane Watanand, whatever you want to call him, get used to it. He's going to be around for a while, especially given the way he's playing right now. He's the youngest guest, I think I've got this right in saying that, the youngest guest I've had on the pod. But even in a career that's still in its infancy, he makes a fantastic interviewee. For some of you, he's the unknown guy who popped up on your leaderboard at Bethpage Black in the second major of the year. So who is Jazz? How do you say his name? What was he doing shaving off his head and his eyebrows a couple of years ago? How did he get to work with Pete Cowan? And what message has he got for Ernie Els? Well, you should find out. You should be entertained, informed as well, hopefully. Here's me and Jazz. The start of 2019, you go to the Singapore Open, first Asian Tour event of the year, and you've arrived probably quite confident with the way you ended 2018?
I think so. You know, finished second in the Indonesia Master was something, because I get to play with Henrik Stenson on the last day as well. Even though Poom won, he played really good that week, I still consider myself pretty good. So confidence level was pretty good, you know, and you got some week off, so you got good rest before that. Play a small event before that as well, Bun Churin Kit, in the north of Thailand. So it kind of add up, it's kind of a perfect combination of warming up and getting good rest. Just so going in there in Singapore with kind of fresh mind and already warm up, so not rusty as well.
So you come to Singapore, Sentosa Golf Club, and it's not an easy golf course.
No, it's not. It's a pretty good test.
But you had good memories of playing there already.
Yeah, I think every time I play there, I finish pretty good, pretty high up, you know. First time I played, I can't remember the first time I played there, but I finished 10th, I finished 3rd the other year, and then I won. So it's pretty, I like that golf course, though.
So going into the weekend, you were not far off the lead, but you knew you had to have a big weekend to really make anything count at all.
I mean, to be honest, I was just going for the open spot. I wasn't even thinking of the win, you know, because Paul Casey was there, Matthew Fitzpatrick was there, David Love was there. Everyone was there. You know, a lot of good players chasing that thing down, you know. Just for me, I was thinking in my head, top six would get in the open for sure. So, you know, I just try not to mess up, try to just hit fairways, green on the third day. I'm talking about the third day. And then kind of play good, you know, get in the last group on the last day. So on the last day, I was just thinking the same thing, you know, even par. I mean, anything under par is good. Just thinking that. And then the round kind of go on and it just clicked, you know, just birdie the first hole, birdie the second. And then after that, it just kind of go on, you know. All the tough hole I pass with ease and make some good birdies, make some good pars coming in. You know, it's really just a perfect storm.
Yeah, let's go back. So 65 you shot on the Saturday. So that really, as you say, got you into the final group, I think, for the fourth tournament in a row as well for you.
Maybe, I don't know, mate. Is it?
So, I mean, in other words, you know, you're comfortable to be in those final groups. But as you've mentioned, you're in the company of some very well-known players. Paul Casey, Matt Fitzpatrick are right in there as well.
Yeah.
And you said you started well, a couple of birdies, but it wasn't just that you birdied those holes. I mean, you dialed in first couple of holes in tight. I mean, they weren't big birdie putts you were knocking in.
Yeah, I mean, hit it close on the first hole, hit it fairly close on the second, and then, I mean, birdie the par five coming in, and then the tough hole, I didn't like the fifth or sixth hole, I didn't like that much. Then I par one of them and birdie one of them. So it's a good surprise. So
yeah, five birdies the first eight holes.
Yeah, I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And then I made a really good par on the seven. You know, my ball kind of kicked and it could be lucky in an unlucky situation, because I landed in the fairway and kind of get a bad kick, end up in one of those rocks, kind of hit it out in the fairway, make a really good par. So that kind of keep the game going.
So you're in the company of Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
So here's a guy who's played, you know, Ryder Cup, former US amateur champion. He's a guy that you've known previously before, though, isn't he?
I've known of him. Maybe he know me. We did a clean together in Dubai Asian Tour at Ailes Club a couple years back. So I know him. I always look up to him. He was like a young guy coming up, and then boom, like he got the world by that. And then he's a very good. He have the same coach as me as well, Pete Cowan. So you know, I know him. So I try to talk to him. You know, like try to. Not learn from him, but I just tried to talk to him because he's such a good player and I admired, and I just want to talk to him and then see if I can any pick his brains.
Yeah, I bet after eight holes and you've birdied five of them, he wants to pick your brains. Like.
I mean, he's not out of the game, you know. After that, he's made some good birdies. And then after nine, I remember 11, 12, made some really, really good par. And then I kind of bogeyed at 13, and that's when I saw Paul Casey name on the board.
Yeah, so Casey's playing behind you. He's starting to make a move. Fujimoto appears, Fitzpatrick's around you. So they're starting to put a little bit of heat on you.
Yeah.
To me, crucial holes turned out to be 15 and 16.
I would say so. Making those two pars was crucial. Par 3, I hit a bad shot. You know, just came out. I just missed a three-footer from nowhere. So my head wasn't in it yet, and then hit a bad shot, have like 50, 60 footer, maybe more, to two putt that, and you're still facing a really tough hole. The 16, I would say the toughest hole in Sentosa. It's a short hole, but it's a very tough hole. Water down the left. You know, I got one shot lead.
That's right.
At that point. One shot lead over Paul Casey and Matthew Fitzpatrick, it's not a lot. So I remember pretty vividly. I hit in the bunker, right? I think hit in the front of the green, and then didn't chip it good. I have 10 footer. I think I remember talking to my caddy. I'm like, "Can you see this?" And he just gave me the look. I know he can't read it because it's just such a tough putt. I think it's a double breaker, straight downhill, really fast. So I'm like, "Okay, I'm just gonna wing it. I'm not even gonna put the line down." Put the blank ball down and just address and just guess where this ball gonna go, just hit and hope.
So when we're commentating, we thought it was gonna go the other way as well.
Yeah.
So have you watched it back, by the way?
Yeah, I watched the replay, and for me,
so you heard us saying that we thought it was gonna go.
You thought it missed already. You thought it's gone.
That's right. So you just basically hit and hope. Is that what
I pretty much just. You know, when you address, you sometimes have a feel where this ball is going to go. So I just put a blank ball down, address my putter, and then just adjust my body where it felt comfortable. And I just roll it. And then I looked up and the ball is tracing the hole. I'm like, okay, this is going in. And boom, I think that's the point where I think I kind of got my confidence back from that three-footer that I missed two holes before. I'm like, okay, I can hold putts again. So next hole, I hit a good drive, hit it on the green, hold the putts, and that's it. You have two-stroke lead going last two holes. So
yeah, and 17's a par three. You've got a nice lead still going down the last, but
yeah,
it's still.
I still have the funny thing is I have bad memories about the last hole. The year before, I was standing second, the Open for sure, hit in the water left. on the drive. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, here we go. Anything, just please don't go left. You know, I mean, spectators don't know what you're thinking during the round, but at that point, it's that time. And at my address position, I was like, please don't go left, please don't go left, please don't go left. That was in my head. But when I hit it out and I saw the ball going down the middle of the fairway, I'm like, okay, we're good.
We're good.
I know,
but there's still trouble around, and it wasn't an easy flag to attack that right pin position.
Well, if you see the replay, I kind of let go of my club. People think I hit a bad shot. I didn't hit a bad shot. I kind of aimed like 10 yards left down the pin because I just want to be safe, you know. Just want an easy birdie, hit it on two putt for birdie. But it kind of went right at the pin, so I'm like, Okay. So you want to show off. So it landed perfectly, perfect spot, kind of roll past pin. I thought I was going to hold that putt, lipped out, but I mean, it's great. And walking up that thing, that hole with people clapping, it's just amazing, amazing moment.
Yeah, when you're on the green, I noticed you maybe wiped a tear.
It's not a tear, it's a sweat kind of come in.
Okay.
Singapore is really hot. I didn't.
It's true. So you didn't, did you get emotional there?
I get emotional, but I was like happy emotion, like, wow, I actually succeed. I actually did it. I couldn't believe that I beat Paul Casey down the stretch, you know, or Matthew Hussick in the same group, you know. It just, it kind of boosts the confidence in me a bit, for sure, and it just kind of proved myself a bit too.
Is that why you've chosen it as the round? Because you've got other wins, and we'll come on to, you know, what's come before that and what's come since as well.
Yeah, but I think Singapore got to be the round, you know. Like, from the start, I didn't think I had the chance because I'm playing against top 30 guys in the world ranking, and I was 130 in the world. Never have a big win, only have Asian Tour wins. So that kind of gave me the boost.
And to shoot 65 over the weekend, break the tournament record, which was Adam Scott's. You shot 18 under. Scott, when he won it in 2010, won 17 under. I mean, it just shows the caliber of golf you played that week.
Yeah, I mean, I one of the best tournaments of my life so far.
So far. It's only the start of your career, though, so there could be more important rounds to come.
But I hope so.
It has, but I mean, we've known about you for such a long time. Maybe not globally, people might be aware of you, but certainly on the Asian Tour, we've known about you. A wonderful win at the Singapore Open, but you're not really from a family of golfing pedigree, are you?
Not really. My father's a judge. He used to play golf. He kind of quit after I started. I don't know why.
Didn't want to be beaten by his son, by the looks of things.
Maybe, I don't know. But I started because I was like about 8 years old, just turned 8. His friend come visit from London. So he went out to play golf with his friend. So I tag along to, not to play golf at that time, but to drive a buggy. You know, golf buggy is one of my favorite things to do on the golf course when I was young. So that's how I started golf, driving buggies. Like every time they went out, like every weekend, I'm like, can I go please? I want to drive. So that's how I got started. And then he was like, oh, if you want to come, don't just drive. Let's play some golf. So that's what I did.
So you're 8 at the time.
I was 8, yeah.
So 8. So how did you go from being 8 years old driving a buggy to, what, 6 years later, making a cut on the Asian Tour, becoming the youngest ever player to do so?
Like, you might not know this, but when I was younger, when I was about 4, I tried many sports. I tried soccer. Soccer was my first sport. I tried football, the real name for it.
Absolutely. Who's your team, by the way?
I don't have a team. Okay. I'm not biased. I'm terrible at it. I have no coordination on my foot and my eyes. So from that, about 5, I started swimming every day. Try to, you know, play for national team swimming. But I kind of didn't grow when I was 5 to 8. Kind of everyone kind of outgrown me. And, you know, swimming, you need to be quite tall to be good. And I kind of stopped growing, so probably lucky to do that. So I need to find another sport. I still swim, but wasn't serious anymore. We kind of know that I'm not going to be making any history doing swimming. So turn into golf, and then, you know, as I've already played so many sports, I know how much time you have to put in to play sport to be good at something. And golf is, and I kind of get it. Come quite natural to me, golf. And I have friends, you know, my dad's playing, my dad's friends playing. It's kind of fun. It's more fun than swimming, for sure. You know, just following the black line for 2 hours a day, it's not fun. Golf is so much more fun. So doing that, and then I start playing a tournament when I was about to turn 9, like par 3 tournament every weekend. There's Saturday tournament and Sunday tournament. I remember going there, got beaten so bad. They beat my, it's 9 holes par 3, and they beat me by 10 stroke. So it was, it was not fun and fun at the same time, you know, how good they are and how much I can improve at that point. And then I kind of gotten good when around 12 years old. I started winning tournaments when I was 12. 11, I started winning those small events, like one day event. When I was 12, I won my first 4 days event, I think, in the junior golf. Because when you were younger, they have these three, four guys who just beat everyone and they just go dominate. But at 12, I start to beat them and I kind of get the confidence and then kind of get, more fun, want to play golf more. And that's how I think I got into the national team when I was like 12.
So 12, it kind of clicked for you?
Yes, 12 kind of clicked. Yes.
So by that time, are you down to a handicap of, are you scratch yet?
I'm scratch on white tees for sure. I couldn't remember if we played black or not when we were 12. I think we played black already and I'm almost scratch.
So your dad is a judge.
Yeah.
Still is a judge.
Yeah.
And it's like a family of scholars. So
yeah. So I have to tell you about my dad family. All of them either a judge or a doctor. They're super smart people. And my sister is in medical school, so I'm the only weird one that plays sports. Yeah, everyone is in education or.
Yeah. So. I mean, 14, I mean, you turned pro.
I turned pro one day before 15, yeah, because the tournament started.
So everyone else is doing medical school.
Yeah, or law school.
Law school, going through to their 24 or whatever it is they have to do. And you're quitting school. Are you quitting school?
I didn't quit school.
So you stood at school even though you turned pro.
I turned pro because junior golf in Asia is not good. Amateur circuit in Asia is nothing like America or Europe. There's no AJGA, there's no amateur circuit where you can win and you get scholar. There's nothing. You have to wait, 3-4 years before the college scout you. So it's no point for me staying in amateur. So I just turned pro. Playing against a pro is a way to learn how to play golf. It's almost better way than playing against amateur because you're playing with someone better than you. So you're going in there with a mindset of not wanting to beat them, but to learn from them, to play against them.
But you are still going to school and doing your studies?
Yeah, until I was 18.
Okay. So what's the school balance like?
I mean, I didn't, even though I turned pro, I didn't play much event. I still play, let's say, one tournament per month at best. Because you have to imagine, I turned pro, yes, but I still have no tour card. It's still a local tour event. And they don't have that much. They have once a month, maybe. Once a month is at best.
But you had made the cut on the Asian tour.
Before, yeah.
When you were 14 years of age, when you were still an amateur.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you must have thought by then, now this is going to be potentially my life, my career.
Yeah, when, you know, I think I first played my Asian tour event was like 13 at Cambodia Pukitara event, Johnny Walker, I think. And at that time, I'm like, wow, pro is so much better. You got the better range, better greens, better grass, better everything. They have club support. They have yardage book. Like I was thinking to myself, why am I playing junior golf? You know, like there's so much more to do out here and so much more to improve. If you play against a better player, you're gonna get better. If you play against someone at your level, you're gonna improve, but slower.
So you're from this family with doctors and lawyers and a father judge. What was their attitude to you?
Yeah, I mean, my dad support me fully. On the other hand, my dad's family was just criticizing, like, are you sure? What if you get hurt? What if he's not as good as you think? What if he just lucky? I mean, there's many criticism because, you know, a long line of doctors in law school, you know, they think that's the only way. I mean, my sister is still in medical school, so they still think it's the only way. But I think I chose the path that I like, you know. I wouldn't enjoy sitting in a classroom. I wouldn't enjoy sitting in an office.
And where do you think you get that? You say that's your dad's side. Has your mum's side got any sportiness in them?
I think my mom was a ice skater and a bowling. bowling, professional bowler. I don't know how to say it.
Long green bowling, that?
No, like the pin ball.
Oh, or, bowling, yes.
Yes, bowling.
Ten pin bowling, yeah.
Ten pin bowling, yeah. I went bowling a couple of times with her and she destroyed me still.
So she played like for a team and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, when she was younger. But
okay, so you that's so maybe you get something like that.
Maybe for sure. And then ice skater. But I mean, she quit way before I was born, so it's nothing that really affect me, I don't think.
And she, because obviously your dad's working and is a judge, a lot of the looking after you, taking you to golf tournaments, you know, going as a pro, you can't just go by yourself.
Yeah. Before 18, you can't fly alone.
So she had to come with you. Yeah.
So there's a lot of criticism that, oh, you already play pro, but why you still travel with your mom? I'm like, I can't fly alone. I have someone to supervise me on the plane or something. So, and you know, at that time, I'm struggling because you kind of use a lot of money traveling two people to golf tournament. Because I first got my tour card when I was 17 on the Asian tour. 17 when I got my tour card, it's not even a full tour card. It's like I think it's a country exemption. So I only get like 80 event per year. So it's not much. And then I kept my card from that 80 event. And then 18, it was my full-time year, my first time.
Yeah, and then when you come onto the tour, your name's still Attawit, Jane Watananon.
Yes, that's the... I changed that when I was like 18 or something, right? My first full year, I changed that.
When you say you changed it, you did. Was there an official naming ceremony for this?
No. Everyone kind of called me Jazz already when I was younger. And everyone doesn't know me by Attawit. It's Jazz in Thailand, so.
Did your mom and dad call you Jazz?
Yeah. No one called me Attawit. It's just Thailand, we have this name. It's not official, but everyone known you by that. And then a real name and then a last name. Like, Kyrdek. No one call him Kyrdek. Everyone call him Am in Thailand. Or Tong Chai is Pro Chang. Chang is like elephant. That's what his name is. And yeah.
And who did...
Pariat is Pro Mai. See, everyone have a nickname.
So yours is Jazz.
Yeah.
And that's... Your dad gave you that.
Yeah, my dad gave me that, yeah.
And he...
Love music, yeah. Love jazz. I love music as well, just not jazz.
You don't like jazz?
No.
So what are you into?
Everything except jazz. not so much into classical, but
Do some people ask you what's your favorite jazz and all that sort of thing?
I probably know only one, Kenny G, because he played golf.
So by now you've changed from, you know, by the time you're 18, you've gone from Attawit and everyone knows you as
jazz.
As jazz, and you've established yourself on the Asian tour.
Yeah.
2013, you say your first full season. Hardly missed a cut. 2014, same story, number of top 10s. 2015, 18th on the order of merit. So even in your teenage years, you're showing a lot of consistency. Are you starting to get frustrated though that you haven't won yet, or are you just happy to be, you know, ticking off tournaments and making weekends?
I mean, at that time, you know, I was still young, you know, to be able to travel the world, I'm happy, you know, just to go out having... Get to contend a couple of times. It was really fun, you know. Didn't close out the deal, but I know myself that I'm out here. I'm still younger than everyone here. I'm still less experienced. They're better than you. So at that time, you just gotta suck it up and just grind it out. You know, I didn't feel bad. I'm not winning, but I just know that one day I can learn to win.
Did you think it would be easier, or was?
I don't know, because I thought it would be easier, and then after I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is not as easy as everyone thinks. So I kind of think it's too hard, and then when I went to America, come back, and then won my first event, that was just, I was shocked because I didn't think it was going to come that easy. When you want it that bad, it doesn't come that easy, but when you didn't expect it, when you least expect it, it comes.
Back with Jazz in a moment. Of course, Jazz in the field at the final major of the year, the Open at Royal Portrush, and you have got the chance to add a little bit more excitement to the action in Northern Ireland by playing a superb golf game, the Fitzdares Fantasy Open. Now, I'm sure you're aware, but you've got to be a UK resident to enter. So if you're listening in various parts of the globe, apologies to that. You've got to be 18 years old and over as well to enter. Very simple, though. All you've got to do pick a five-man team plus a reserve for the Open Championship. The winnings of your five players are then added up, and that makes your final score. There are three different entry fees for this game. You can play for a tenner, for £100, or £1,000. Now, for the Fantasy Masters, the prize pot was a whopping £153,000. The winner will get to pocket 40% of the prize pot. You've got to be in the top 25 to win, and the website will show you the prize breakdown. You can get this. You can enter more than one team. In fact, enter four. You'll get a fifth free. You can also share the competition with a friend. If they win, you'll win a percentage too. And you'll be in good company as well, as this game is a favourite among Premier League footballers, BBC presenters as well. Now, my lineup, for what it's worth, I maybe should say steer away, but here we go. Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods, no big surprises there. Brooks Koepka, not a big surprise either. So I thought I'll throw in a couple of outsiders. Danny Willett, and I have to do it, don't I, seeing his podcast. Jazz, Jane Watson-Anand as well. My reserve is Tommy Fleetwood. So to get playing, go to fantasy.fitzdares.com. That's fantasy.fitzdares.com, where you also find the terms and conditions. As with all forms of gambling, make sure you play responsibly and be gamble aware. Now let's get back to that chat with Jazz.
You're listening to the Round Golf Podcast with Richard Kaufman.
2016 was your worst year as a pro, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. What I did was play my first half of the year on the Asian Tour. I made like 60-something thousand. I thought I kept my card. That's why I left. That's why I went to do some Monday Q on the web.com tour. You know, try to get that web.com.
Yeah, so card. Let's explain. September, around that sort of time, you said, okay, that's going to be my last event of the year, or at least my last event for a while.
Is it September? Or is it...
I think so, something like that.
Yeah, maybe. My last event was Kranz this year.
Yeah, so that's... Well, end of August, actually, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. So you played Switzerland, which was a co-sanctioned
Asian
tour.
Yeah, I missed the cut.
You missed the cut, and instead of playing some of the events, and there's quite a few coming up on the Asian Tour.
Yeah, I missed like eight of the event that year, I think, in that period.
So you decided to go to...
America.
So you didn't think at the time that was a risk?
Well, I'm like, if I got the web.com card, it's worth it. If I don't, I still can come back and, you know, try to play my way and back in the Asian Tour to keep my card. But I thought I already thought I kept my card. To be honest, that's why I left. Because the year before, 65,000 hit my card. And at that time, I already make like 67.
Unfortunately, you...
It didn't. I miscalculated.
So what, I mean, what are you thinking at the end of the year?
After I missed my web.com card, I'm like looking at the order made on Asian Tour, and I'm like, oh, this is not good. This is not looking good. I'm 58 or something. Or 60, and then I tried to come back for the Resort World Manila. Didn't get back in time or something. I kind of withdraw and I tried to get back in. Didn't get back in because they ran out of invite or something. So I'm like, okay, I have three tournaments left and I need to make 10 grand. And I think I'm like $500 short or something.
Well, I mean, we all know how it works out at the time. But you, yeah. I mean, you've now lost your Asian Tour card.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, I'm like, okay, I don't have much to play. What do I do? So I just turned 21, right? So go to monastery and be a monk for 2 weeks. That's what you do. Because I need to do it anyway. I just can't find a free time if I have a tour card. That's almost a perfect timing. That's a perfect timing to lose my card.
So let's get this straight. As a Thai boy...
Yeah, when you turn 21, you do it for your family.
So you go to a monastery and it's just... Is it like a cultural thing or...
It's cultural things. It's a religious thing as well. You do it for your parents to give them the good spirit to send them to heaven, you know, or... If you've never done it before and someone died in your family, you do it for them as well, send them to heaven.
And I know in hindsight, it was a very positive thing for you. But I can imagine not every Thai kid, young man, wants to go into a monastery. Did you want to do it?
I was just a bit scared because there's 270-something rules, 276 rules in it. If you in that period, you can't do 270-something things. I'm like a 21-year-old kid. I'm like, oh man, 2 weeks of this, I don't know how to do this.
So when you got the list of rules, did you beforehand?
Yeah.
So when you went through them, what was the one you were dreading most?
You can't eat after lunch. I'm like, I'm a hungry boy. I need to eat. I'm like, you can't swear, you can't kill anything. There's so many things. So many things in there.
So yeah, you can talking?
There's a period where you can't talk as well. For like, if you want to do a training, they send you in like a graveyard and just not let you talk for 2 days, a day, or 24 hours.
So there's an incentive not to speak.
Yes. So if you see something, don't say anything. So I'm like, oh no.
So when did you start, when you're in this monastery, when did you start actually to enjoy the experience?
I don't know if I think I forget to enjoy it because there's so many rules I need to follow. It's like stay in the prison, right? It's hard. It's not enjoy. It's not sad. It's just neutral, very neutral. Because you just try to do, you know what you plan the whole day. You just do what you have to do. And it's very good. It's good for golf because when you're a monk, you know what to do the whole day. You've got your all planned out. When you're a golfer, you try to all plan out. Then you're a monk, something doesn't work out, you kind of adapt. Same thing as golf. When you have a battle, you have to adapt and just move on.
Same thing. You shaved off your head.
Yeah, shave your eyebrows. You can't buy food, I think. I can't remember. You have to go to a market and just stand there and wait for people to give you food. So you have to eat whatever. You can't be picky. You can't pick what you eat.
So before lunch?
Yeah. No. In the morning. So you wake, the days goes like you wake up at 4:30, 4 o'clock, 4:30. You pray, you chant, and then you shower, and you go out. Go out in the market like 6 o'clock, walk around with the bowl, and then someone will put in food or money. It's a goodwill, so they will give you food for medicine or they give you food to eat, and that's what you do every day at 6 o'clock, and then you come back to the monastery at 8, and then you go chanting again till 10. So you eat first, and go chanting, and then you eat again, and then that's it for the day. And then you pray, you chant, you meditate. That's all you do. And the civilian will come in, talk to you, like explain their problem, and then you try to give them advice. And that's what gets me. I think like try to give them advice that I don't even know. I'm like, there's so many people with problems in this world, and then it just put the perspective in life. There's so many people with.
Now, what sort of things would people come to? Without going, you know, obviously. You don't...
But I mean, they're not talking to me. They're talking to like the master.
Okay. Like, but you're seeing all this.
Yeah, I'm seeing
and
all
hearing
this,
it all.
And hearing it all, and it's something else.
Yeah.
Really.
Which in a particularly the bubble of golf. You know, people complaining about, oh, have you seen the state of the greens, or, yeah, you know, the accommodation isn't good, or, you know, as you say, to then have a perspective outside of that is quite beneficial, isn't it?
It's like some of them don't even have money to eat the next meal. They don't know what to do. It's just so many things there that put perspective in life. But I think you do that on the first few days, and then they send you in training, so they put you in the graveyard. They give you a mat, a small mat, an umbrella, and like a mosquito blocker, mm-hmm. And that's it. That's it. You sleep under umbrella for 24 hours. No talking. There's a couple guys, couple of monks next to you, but no talking. In the graveyard, and it's very dark.
And did 24 hours feel like 24 hours, or did it feel like a week?
Felt like a year, I think. Like, there's no phone, right? There's no phone with you. It's you and that umbrella and that mat and that mosquito blocker. And that's it. And a book, like a chanting book, if you need to chant, like to pray. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So what can you do? You can only walk, sit down, or lay down. And that's the three things human do, right? Like walk, sit down, lay down when you don't have anything. So that 24 hours, just did that all day. Didn't talk to anyone. Feel so scary. And when's the last time you been without your phone for more than 5 hours?
Yeah, very rare. I mean, I actually did lose my phone once on a golf course. I had it for 2-3 days.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And to not be able to talk to anyone, there's no computer, nothing. It's just.
And you're a very sociable person as well.
Yeah.
So
I like talking.
Yeah. Which is why I want you on here, Jazz, as well.
I like talking, and to be quiet for 24 hours is an experience, an eye-opening experience.
But yes. You did it. Yeah. Because you probably would have been told if I'd have told you this at 18, you would do that. You probably wouldn't believe me that you'd be able to do it.
Yeah. I mean, after 24 hours, I remember coming back, after it ends, I didn't even talk much because I kind of learned how to cope with myself, you know, to stay with myself. And then I think that's the experience that helped me win the next month that I play a tournament.
Yeah, because you came out of the monastery.
I came out of the monastery a day before I Q school.
So kind of good mental preparation, but not very good physical golfing
preparation. I remember exactly, like I was looking at my club. I'm like, why is this golf club so long? Did someone do something to my club? Because 2 weeks is a long time to play a tournament right away. And I remember playing with my best friend on tour, Marcus Moth, the first 2 days. Marcus Boston. And he was laughing at me because I was hitting it so bad. It's an easy golf course, Suvarnabhumi. It's a very easy golf course. And I remember Marcus was like 4 under after 9, and I'm 3 over. And I'm like.
Yeah, because like, so 20 under would win it, roughly 25 under.
Yeah, even, you need to make at least 15 under to make the card or something, right?
Yeah.
Or 10 something. I don't know, I'm like 3 over par. Front nine, I'm like, this is not looking good. So
you missed the cut.
Yeah, I did. I made the cut on the line.
Oh, you made the cut, but you didn't.
I grinded out to make the cut on the line.
But you didn't get your card, though.
I didn't get my card. So anyway, that get me into ADT next week. My first ever ADT event in my life.
21 years of age, which is not unusual for a 21-year-old, but is unusual for someone who's been playing Asian Tour events since they were 13.
Yeah, so first Asian Tour, first ADT in my life.
I should explain, ADT is the secondary tour in Asia.
Yeah, secondary. You don't play for much. You play for 50 grand, the purse, I think.
Yeah.
It's not much. I traveled to Malaysia, stay in a really cheap hotel. I remember very vividly that I made the cut on the line and finished last. And they hand me about $200 in the end of the week. I'm like, this doesn't even cover my airfare. So that was, I was like, but I wasn't mad because I just came out of manga. I don't care. Golf is something outside my control.
You say you didn't care. I mean,
I care a bit because I spent a bit of money to get there. But you know, I'm still happy that I made the cut. Happy to myself. You know, I haven't played golf in a long time, and that's the second week coming out to play golf. And after that, I went back to Thailand, apply for Bangladesh, Bangaroo, Bangladesh Open, I think. And
which is an Asian Tour event.
Which is an Asian Tour event. I get in off my category. You know, going there, I said to my caddy, like, I felt really good about this week. How can I say that I felt really good about this week? I missed my card. I finished last on the DDT. Walking there, and I was like, I felt good about. I really felt good about this week. It just turned out to be the week. The week, like, it just, everything is went so easy, you know. No stress. It's no stress at all. I play golf every week. I have stress. Like, could be that week I have some bad holes. Or Singapore, you know, the 3-footer, like whatever, like little bit by bit, you gotta be something that went wrong. That week, nothing went wrong. It's so weird. I don't know why. Nothing went wrong. Hit most of the fairways, make most of the putt that needs to be made. It's crazy.
Because you said earlier, you know, the expectations you had, I've got to win, nothing was happening.
Nothing was happening.
And yet, even though you said you felt good.
I felt good, but not like I'm going to win.
And I don't suppose anybody else was expecting you to win.
No, either. Like, if you look at my result, I just came off the monastery, come out as a monk, and then missed the Asian Tokyo School, like I said, and then finished last on ADT. No one expected me to play good. No one. I think I was just... First day, I remember shooting 7 under par. Shabanka was there. Shabanka shot 7 under par as well, I think. And to the end, it's just on the last day, it's me, Shabanka, and Siddhikar. And Siddhikar, you know, that golf course is his home course.
Sure.
Tons of people following him. Like, tons. Like, hundreds and hundreds of people.
And you had a 4-shot lead going into the final round.
Yeah.
And really, you
pretty much hit it every fairway.
You made it look easy.
Hit every fairway. I don't remember hitting any bad shots that day. You know, I missed a couple easy putts, but hit every green. What can you say?
Because listen, the choice of the round is yours. You've chosen Singapore, and I can understand. You know, as you say, you saw off Paul Casey, you saw off Matt Fitzpatrick, some established Ryder Cup players who have played in a lot of majors. Yeah. In a way, Bangladesh is a big turning point for you because you've gone without any Asian tour.
Yeah.
Proper status.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're a winner.
Yeah. I mean, from that point's perspective, I think to win that week helped me win Singapore. Because it's like two years to build up to win Singapore, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, after that, I didn't win anything, but I finished pretty high out in the ranking. And then
2006, the end of that year, you went to Q School, didn't you, for the European Tour?
Yeah, 2016, I went to Q School.
At the end of that year, after playing well on the Asian Tour, and then you had a remarkable Q School as well, didn't you?
Yeah, the story is crazy. I'm on the line, and I have 4 holes to play. Nick Pugh was telling me at that moment, and we were like, we know we need to make all pars to make the cut. Hooked it in the bush, lost ball, make double. We're like, okay, 3 holes to go, 2 outside the cut line. That changed really quickly.
Need to make a birdie.
That changed really quickly. Okay, par 5. We can make birdie. Barely made par. I remember making a tough par. Par 3, high par 3, making par. And I'm like, okay, it's all for nothing, I guess. This is it. I remember I hit my drive. I thought I missed way right. But it kind of, but I didn't see the ball. And I turned around and asked him, like, did you see where my ball is? And he was like, oh, it's down the fairway, it's fine. I'm like, okay, we got a chance then. This is a par 5. We could eagle this. Walking down, didn't think of nothing, just like try to eagle it. Hit a bad second shot, right at the green. I'm like, okay. Walking up, the score was there. Confirm, I need to eagle it. And that just gave me the incentive. I'm like, okay, why not? Just take the pin out, please. Hold it from, I mean, like 15 yard chip down this hill slider. I'm like, whoa. And they caught it on camera. I'm like, that's unbelievable. I didn't expect it to go in at all. And, you know, it's a good story.
It's a great story. So you got your European Tour card. I mean, what was the experience for you like 2017? Because, I mean, there were some good results in there, but you didn't do enough to keep your card.
No, I didn't. You know, playing European Tour is very different than Asian Tour. The weather, the grass, the people, the hotel, the travel, everything's different. So brand new, 2017, I don't know anything. Play not great, I have to say. And then, but I mean, 2017 is still a good year for me on Asian Tour though. So even though I play bad on the European Tour, I still play quite good on the Asian Tour, so I didn't mind that much.
No.
And then last year, I was just thinking, like, I was just going to play some event on the European Tour. I'll get in some, but I'm not going to go to all of them. because it's just not enough time.
Yeah, because I'm looking at players that are, because we know that you now you're on, you know, you're pretty close to the world's top 50. And most of the guys that have been in Asia, like Kiradek and Anaban, who have done that recently, they've pretty much done it European Tour, winning on the European Tour.
Yeah.
You're quite rare in the fact that you're pretty much on the verge of doing it by pretty much doing it in Asia only.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know how close did I get.
But that shows you the consistency of your golf right now, doesn't it? Because the world ranking points you're playing for are not as big as they would be if you were getting similar results in Europe or elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. But still, European Tour is still a different feel, different grass, different everything. You just need to perform there. If you can perform there, it's good.
Do you feel like you've got the game for that, though?
I think because this year, 2019, I'm playing in Japan, it's going to help me with the putting for sure. Because the biggest thing is putting here and there. Bent grass on European Tour, bent grass on Japan Tour, bent grass on PGA Tour, Mill Builder on Asian Tour. So we're playing on grain every week. So I remember the first year I played on European Tour, I remember overreading everything. Like everything I overread. And I'm like, oh, this, if you can't hold putts, you can't play tournament golf. It's hard to win. So this year, that's why I decided not to play as much in Europe and to control my soul and to play in Asia and Japan so I don't have to travel that much. Traveling is one thing that will mess you up because jet lag, if you're tired, you don't play your best and then the result kind of crumble. So you need to be fresh all the time. So
I mean, because we're going to talk about obviously the USPGA and everything that's happened there. Have you had opportunities to be traveling in different parts of the world?
Yes.
Have you had any invites that you know?
I didn't get invited from the PGA Tour yet. I didn't ask for it because I didn't want to do it because I'm leading on the Japan Tour and I'm second on Asian Tour. So for me, this is the important part. European Tour, I already kept my card for next year to Maybank and PGA Championship. So they offered me a couple of invites saying you're eligible if you want to play because you already kept your card for next year. But I kind of tell them, like, I try to win the Asian Tour tournament and maybe Japan Tour. So this is important for me right now. So I'll be patient and wait till next year for me to go out in the world again.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's clear thinking, and I think I can see the reasons behind it. To win the Asian Tour of Merit would be a huge achievement. The same in Japan. I mean, we're going to have to gloss over 2018. You win your second title, the Queen's Cup, in your home of Thailand. Your mum and dad are there.
Yeah.
You won it in brilliant style again, 5 straight birdies to start the back nine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, another special win for you. But as we mentioned, you then go to Singapore, start of 2019. You win again. And it's fair to say 2019 has just been memory after memory, really, for you. I mean, going to America, first major in the United States, and performing like you did there, I mean, obviously it's still fresh in the mind. It didn't happen that long ago. It must be give you great pride as well.
I mean, if someone were to say, oh, you're going to finish top 15 that week, I would just say, stop lying, stop bullshitting me. I mean, but to get to that point where I think I made the turn in the last round and I'm still standing second. I'm like, you know, last round, the wind pick up, you know, everyone knows the story. I make 7 bogeys in a row, I think. I mean, it's all tough and that's all. But to play against him and finish top 15, I'm really happy already. To be up there, I'm pretty proud of myself.
Sure. I mean, as you say, though, for a long time, you're up there. So tell us, did you meet Tiger? Because is Tiger your hero?
On Monday, I think. Either on Monday or Tuesday. I can't remember the exact date.
Is established. Is Tiger the man for
you? The man for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's not unusual for, you know, guys your age as well.
But so I was first on the range. 7 o'clock, I was there. 7:10, Tiger caddy walked past me. I'm like, whoa, okay. okay, this is about to get real. Steinberg walked past me, I think, and then Tiger with three bodyguard walking past. So kind of jump in front of him and put my hands out and say, congratulations on your master win. And I forgot to introduce myself.
Because hadn't all your friends told you got to go and introduce yourself to Tiger before you left?
Yeah. But I just forgot to introduce myself. I'm like, congratulations on your master win. And he's like, thanks, man. And he just walked past me and I'm like, I don't think he knows who I am. I forgot to tell him who I am. I was going to say, I'm from Thailand. I'm your biggest fan. I'm like, I forgot to say all that.
Yeah, but I think by maybe Saturday afternoon, he ended up missing the cut. If he was watching on TV, I think he might know who you are now.
I don't know about that. But I just hope he come back and win again. I want to see him do that.
Well, you get a chance to see him again at Port Rush, don't
yes,
you?
Yes. It's really good. He's in Thailand right now. Vacationing with his family, so
yeah. I mean,
really...
for because people forget, you know, he has a Thai mother. So for Thai golfers and people like yourself, is Tiger considered, you know, part Thai, which he is?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? What does that mean to you? The fact that he is half Thai.
Well, there is a rumor circling around that he have a Thai name, but no one seems to be able to prove it. His name is Piton. Because his last name is Woods, and Woods is like trees, right? Mm-hmm. Trees, tonmai, so we call him Piton. And someone said, a lot of people say, not just someone, I at least 10 people said to me, if you see him jazz, call him Piton and see if he knows his name. I'm like, how? And I forget all that. So next time I want to ask him, but I might be too scared.
Well, if he's a poor Russian, he's just been in Thailand, then... Maybe your chance is coming up there. But, I mean, the week itself, you know, it's your first major in the United States.
Yep.
On a golf course like Bethpage Black. When you saw that course in practice, what were you thinking?
I was like, okay, I'm going to have a weekend off. I'm like, Manhattan is a cool city, you know. I haven't explored all of it yet. I could go to Peter Lucas, maybe go to up to World Trade Center, you know. Yeah. But practice round, play with Kierdek. You know, every time I get in a center tournament, it's Kierdek. We play practice round together. He teach me a lot of stuff. You know, he told me what to do. But this golf course, it's so long. The rough is so long. The course is so long. The green is so fast and firm.
So you've never played anything like this before?
No, it's the hardest golf course. It's the hardest flat golf course I ever played in my life. I mean, DLF is a bit, it's hard, but it's crazy hard.
Yeah, talking about DLF golf and country club in India. Yeah.
Yeah, DLF golf is crazy hard. It's not, I don't know what to say. It's just different. But this golf course is not different than another course. It's just a beast. It's just long, rough is long, green is firm and fast and windy.
Yet, I wouldn't say you mastered it, but... You performed above what you hoped for.
The lucky thing is the first 3.5 round, the wind wasn't picking up. And then that back nine, the winds kind of pick up. And then that make the golf course really hard. You can see on the TV, everyone was struggling.
Sure.
That back nine.
Even Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, because of the wind just picked up.
Yeah.
You don't see it on TV, but when you play, you know.
Now, this was you at Bethpage Black. Being announced on the first tee. I don't know if you're going to have to out
him. I laugh every time.
So, yeah. So, you're announced on the first tee like that, which isn't quite how you say your name.
Well, that's passable, you know. He got the syllable right. He got five syllables. Good.
Yeah.
I
think you just went a little too long, didn't you? So, just because people... Obviously, you're going to be the Open, and there was one or two struggling with you. I know how to say it, but... Let's hear it from yourself.
I quite enjoy people not knowing how to say my name.
What's your favorite? What's the favorite one you've heard?
I don't want to say the name, but you know her.
Okay.
She lives in Singapore. Shout out to Suan. She said, Jenna, whatever. Once. I'm like, whoa. That was really good. Jenna, whatever. It's one of the best. Or, but the New Yorker gave me some really good last name. They were like, Jazz, I'm like, whoa, where did that come from? They just give me some really, really funny names. I couldn't remember it all, but yeah.
Yeah, but when you're on the first team, you hear the starter, as you said, he gave it a good try, but get it wrong. Does that make you lose your concentration a little? Because you're like kind of...
I'm kind of used to it, you know? Okay. Like, it will be like that for the rest of my life, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
it's pretty good. I kind of like it, you know? It gets the crowd kind of like laughing, you have a good time.
But in Thailand, is it fair to say you just say Jazz? No one ever really uses your surname?
No, just Jazz. Jazz. Yeah, pretty much.
I heard JJ a few times.
Yeah, JJ is like the first time ever I played with Arjun Atwal. I talked to him a lot about Tiger because he knows a lot about Tiger Woods. He was like, people call me Double A. I'm going to call you Double J from now on. I'm like, okay.
Sounds good. You mentioned Kiradek showing you around the golf course. Yeah. He's been quite important to you, hasn't he?
Yeah, for sure. You know, growing up, Kiradek, when I first got on tour, Kiradek won his first event in Sale Open. I remember that pretty vividly. He go down, kiss the ground. I'm like, congratulations, pouring water. And it's from then, it's been very genuinely nice to me. You know, like if I need help, if I don't know anything, I can text him. He can give me advice, give me something, you know.
Yeah, and he's been quite important in meeting your coach.
Yes,
Pete Cowan.
I think that's the turning point for me. The Open last year, I've been telling Kiradek since the Hong Kong Open before. I'm like, I want to meet your coach. Like, I want to work with Pete. Kiradek was like, it's not easy to work with him. He doesn't accept any new student. He doesn't take any new student in. He's very, very private and he's very, very up there. I'm like, okay, what do I do? And he was like, I'm gonna whisper in his ears. He needs to like you if he wants to teach you. I'm like, okay. About 6 months later, met him in Scottish Open. I didn't play Scottish Open. I land in Scotland and I drive to see Kiradek play and Tong Chai play because I didn't have my full car on European Tour, so I couldn't get in the Rolex Series. But anyway, I drive to watch them play because, you know, Thai, need to support the Thai.
Sure.
So I saw that Kiradek was working with Mike Walker, his Pete Cowan assistant, and Pete was standing right behind Mike. I'm like, okay, this is the time to do it. I walk up to Kiradek, said, "Sawasdee krap," and then Kiradek was like, "Oh, Jess, meet Pete." Can you remember that instant? Like, I need to meet Pete. Like, he didn't even know I'm coming. And he saw me and they're like, "Oh, Pete is here." So he's very thoughtful and I have to thank him for that. And since then, the first few months was a struggle because I haven't seen him much. I've seen him at the Open and then didn't see him at all till right before Hong Kong again. Pretty much a year to actually work with him. So it's been good, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously we know about Pete Cowan and the US Open just now. Of course, Gary Woodland, another of his pupils, one Brooks Koepka, he does some stuff with as well, came second. You mentioned Kiradek. I mean, I think there's about 12 players or so that he sees. And obviously it must be hard for you, as you
said. I'm like a plus one. Yeah. He doesn't see me that often. I need to wait till the range almost closed for him to see me, or I'm the first guy at the range for him to see me. The big players, if the big player is there, he needs to see him first because, you know, they're the big players. I respect that. And I, even when he's teaching like Matt Fitz or Stenson, I always sneak up and then try to listen in, you know.
So obviously I don't expect you to give me a whole full scenario here, but what's he teaching you, and is he teaching you so that you can then help yourself? Because obviously if you're not going to be able to see
him because everywhere. I don't see him that often, so he give me, but he's very, very commit coach, so he'll tell you, okay Jazz, do this, and if you succeed this, do this, and there's next step, I'll tell you the next step later or something like that. He just gives you the steps, lay it on you what to do.
Yeah, because I heard Gary Woodland talking about that, and he says he doesn't want text coming in the whole time to him as well. Yeah, he wants you to try and sort it out.
You sort it out, and then I like that kind of coach where he's very, very committed to his word. Like, I worked with many coaches before, and a lot of coaches like, okay, try this, okay, try this. If it doesn't work, maybe try this instead, you know? But he's not like that. It's like, do this. It's very true to his word.
He's a Yorkshireman, so.
Yeah, he doesn't change his mind. He's like, if you can't do it, keep doing it till you get it.
And it's worked for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, and he's not soft on you. If you play bad, he'll just tell you straight, like, oh, you're doing this wrong. Like, you need to fix yourself. You need to work harder.
And as I said, it's worked out pretty well.
It's something I needed, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. I look at you now on the brink of the world's top 50. A major, we're talking at the Korean Open at the moment. And,
yeah.
And obviously, we're not far away from the Open.
Yeah.
You mentioned a little earlier that, you know, obviously you met Pete Cowan at Scotland before you went to the Open Championship as well. So you've had some experience of the Open. How much are you looking forward to going back?
I mean, I'm looking forward to the toughness it's going to bring me. The course last year, I remember, in Canusti, as everyone says, Canasti, because it's so hard. And when the wind picks up, it's just next level. I heard Port Rush might be even harder. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
Well, you're going to find out.
I'm going to find out. And I hope Pete can give me some tricks on how to hit that low shot, because we never need it in Asia or America. You only need it in Europe.
Yeah, so how alien is it to you playing links golf? Because you say it's nothing like anything you would have growing up.
I played some tournaments when I was younger. The Duke of York, when I was younger, played at Royal St. George. I have a fun story about that. Went on the practice round, out on myself alone, just carry my own bag. Get to about, because it doesn't come back to the clubhouse on the 10th, I can't remember. I got lost on like the 12th or something. I tried to find, it was raining hard, raining sideways. I got my umbrella, got my bag. I was 13, I think, just turned 13. I'm trying to find the clubhouse. You can't see the clubhouse from anywhere in the golf course. I got lost. I just sit there, wait till the rain stop. The rain doesn't stop. I think somebody had to come find me because it's gotten dark.
How long were you out there, seriously?
Like 3 hours.
So it was good preparation for sitting there 24 hours at the graveyard at the monastery, wasn't it, really?
I got my phone then, but I didn't have internet. I can't call anyone. Back then, you know, it's a long time ago. Internet come a long way, so I was just sitting there 3 hours just... Because it's raining sideways when it rains in England, doesn't it?
And you hadn't probably seen anything like that before.
I'm like, what is going on? It's dunes everywhere. I don't know where the clubhouse is. When they walk that way, it could get further away.
Well, yeah. So I suppose at Carnoustie, you knew what to expect.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to get lost in the golf course because I have a yardage book.
Yeah. And a few fans around for the Open itself. Yeah. No, Royal Port Rush, I'm sure, will be a fantastic experience for you. I know one of your goals would be, you'd love to do it, and obviously you have to play really well from now on to do it, but President's Cup?
Yes, mid-August, a cut-off date, so a lot of miracles need to be in play to get in.
As we talk right now, you're 12th on the standings. I mean, what would that mean to you to be playing for anyone else in Australia at the President's Cup? Because you've played Royal Melbourne, haven't you?
I have played Royal Melbourne. I went with my best friend, Marcus Bott, again. He took me there and we played, and I'm like, I like that course. Ernie, I like that golf course.
Message to Ernie Els.
If I don't get in by the number, please pick me.
But listen, I mean that would be...
That would be such a big deal, you know, such an honor. And, you know, I want to compete. I love team games. It's something I don't experience when I'm growing up, because golf is not a team game. But as I found out end of last year, I love team games. I played at that Friendship Cup, yeah, Thailand.
Versus Japan, yeah?
Yeah, Thailand versus Japan. 5 men, 5 women, all pros, and then 2 amateurs on each team. And I played, and I got 4-0, win 4-0. So I have a pretty good track record of playing team game, and I think I work really well with other people. I don't know, I just like talking. So if I have a teammate, it'll be good.
You'd be great in the team room as well.
And I really like, I'm really supportive guy, so I always support other players.
Yeah. Listen, you're only, what, 23? And already, you know, all these great stories, and you've got so much ahead of yourself to to look forward to. Let's say you're 23 now. At 30, do you set yourself goals where you'd like to be, or?
I don't like to set goals that far. I like to do short-term goals, you know. You can, if it's possible to do that or not. Like, the long-term goals, I see myself playing on PGA Tour when I'm 30. But that's like a flake goals. You want something to be committed to. I think the short-term goals are the best. Like mini goals, touch short-term goals, I think is the best. So first thing to get into the Olympics is my first thing, because I missed out last year. But I wasn't even close. But this year, have a chance. I'll be playing with Kyrgyz as well, so it'll be a team, really good team game. And
the number one.
Yeah.
Asian tour, I assume.
Yeah, and then I'm on Asian tour. Yeah, Japan, on the Japan side, try to get in Sozo Championship, which is like the new CIMB, I think. $9 million event. Last year, I missed it by one CIMB. And 3 years ago, I missed it by one as well. This funny story is, I think last year, 2018, I have... 3 times I went to do a first on-site reserve, didn't get any of them. 3 times, that's crazy.
And you missed the US Open by one putt as well, didn't you,
this year? Yes, so the story is kind of funny. But I think something that's hard to get, it'll come sweeter when you get it.
Sure, sure. And I'm sure, given what you've done so far, I'm sure you'll get there.
Yeah.
Lovely talking to you, Jez.
Thank you very much.
Well, I don't know about you, but that was great fun to do, hopefully for you as well, listening. And the good news as well, I did that interview the day before the start of the Korea Open in Seoul, and we got our first round golf podcast bump, because a few days later, Jazz went on to win his second Asian Tour title of the season. And then the following week, he finishes third on the Japan Tour, and as a result, he is currently in the automatic spots for the President's Cup. So, number one on the Asian Tour, number one on the Japan Tour, in the automatic spots for the President's Cup. I think fair to say, some exciting times ahead for the Thai, and maybe even at the Open Championship itself. Thanks to all your responses to the Ryan Fox podcast. John Drake got in touch, said he was chuffed about the podcast. He says Foxy, as he called him, is one of his favourites. If he hears you appreciating his play, he acknowledges with a thanks. Just a bit of extra class. Sean Smith says, really good interview. If you didn't know better, you'd think this son of a legend had an armchair ride into professional golf. He says, listen, and you find out the reality. Remember when Grant was playing, rugby was an amateur event. Yeah, it was another fascinating listen as well. Please get in touch. What do you think about Jazz, eh? Love to hear your thoughts. What did you think about what he had to do in that monastery, for starters? Please let us know at The Round Podcast on Twitter, at The Round Golf Podcast on Facebook. And I know many of you have done so already, but keep the ratings coming on iTunes. It really helps if you do that. Give us 5 stars, please, or whatever you want to put on there, actually. But 5 stars would be nice. It just helps to become more visible to people who haven't listened before, and they get to know about the podcast. Lots more goodies still coming your way over the next few weeks. But for now, from the Round Golf Podcast, myself, Richard Kaufman. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Round with Richard Kaufman. You can follow us and get in touch via Twitter at The Round Podcast, on Instagram, Podcast The Round, and on Facebook at The Round Richard Kaufman. And we'd appreciate you taking the time to rate and review us on iTunes. The Round Podcast with Richard Kaufman, in association with IMG Audio.